We don't need to be satisfied just to survive. To thrive is really an intention.
At Home with Growing Older is a nonprofit organization which believes in peer learning and creating discussions which bring the lens of aging to a variety of topics. At Home with Growing Older is proud to be your host of At Home on Air, a radio hour offering connection, community, and knowledge to our participants remotely. Now, we invite you to listen and learn from this live recorded episode of At Home on Air.
Welcome to At Home on Air. My name is Susie Stadler. I'm an architect and also the executive director of At Home with Growing Older. We're an interdisciplinary learning community on aging founded in 2009. Our goal is to bring people together from all different disciplines in conversation with the goal to improve the experiences of later life. Our host is board member Marcy Rogo. Marcy was able to coax Helen Dennis into joining us in this conversation. Helen invented and founded the movement of Renewment, a new way of thinking about retirement, 19 years ago. So without further ado, Marcy and Helen, thank you again so much for joining us. We're all looking forward to Renewment.
Thank you. Thank you, Susie. And I know you're all looking forward to hearing Helen, but I must give her a proper introduction. If you don't know Helen Dennis, this is a very special person in our aging world. She's nationally recognized as a leader in issues of aging and the new retirement with academic, corporate, and nonprofit experience. She's received awards for teaching at USC's School of Gerontology and for her contributions to the field of aging, the community, and literary arts. I can say from personal experience, if you've gone to a conference about aging and you haven't seen Helen, then you probably weren't there. She's the editor of two books, including Project Renewment, which we're going to talk about, and the author of over 100 articles, frequent speaker and weekly syndicated columnist on successful aging for the Southern California News Group, reaching 1.6 million readers and publishing over 900 columns. She's assisted over 20,000 employees to prepare for the non-economic aspects of their retirement. Helen is the co-author of the LA Times bestseller, as we said, Project Renewment, the first retirement model for career women. And she's been recognized by PBS Next Avenue as one of the nation's 50 influencers in aging. So not too much, just kidding. That's quite the bio, and I'm very excited she's here.
Marcy, I want to thank you. I want to introduce my co-author and co-founder, Bernice Bratter. She has been my co-conspirator for 20 years on everything we've done in Renewment. So as we speak, I may defer and ask Bernice if she has any comments.
Yes, absolutely. Welcome, Bernice. We're really excited to have you here as well. Great. So let's jump into Renewment. For those that don't know what the word Renewment came from and what the project is, what is it and why did you start this?
Let's start with the reason why. This is 20 years ago when we figured out about 10 million boomer women probably had careers that were meaningful to them beyond money. It was really the first time so many career women were identifying themselves with their role, and people identify themselves that way. But I think the most important is we had no role models. Maybe we had Madeleine Albright or maybe Mary Kay. I can't really identify with either. But most of the role models were male, and most of them are financially based. So we can say it was a need, but let me tell you a story about really how it started. Bernice calls me. She had just retired her second retirement as executive director. She was at the time at the Women's Foundation. Bernice calls me in my area's retirement, and she says, Helen, is there anything done for women who feel passionate about their work, really strongly, about the next 20 to 30 years? Because she said, I think I'm having a hard time. I said, Bernice, we are not even on the radar. No one is thinking about us. So Bernice says, well, let's have lunch and see if there's anything to talk about. That was a four-hour lunch. So Bernice says, well, why don't you invite some like-minded women? I'm going to do the same and see if there's something here. That was a four-hour dinner. We've been meeting for 20 years. But we proceeded to meet once a month to talk about issues of transition and change from something that you were passionate about, your meaningful work, to this thing called retirement for the next 20 to 30 years. We had no intention of growing. We didn't really have an intention of writing a book. And we transcribed our conversations for the first 5 years. During that time, other women, particularly in the west side of Los Angeles, said, you know, I hear you have this interesting group of women. Can we join? It's hard to join in the middle of a group. We said, you know, we'll help you start a group. Well, that was group two. Now there are about 40 groups throughout the country, some meeting anywhere from 2 years to 20 years, that meet on a regular basis to talk about transition and change. So that's how it started. Let me just give you a few more facts. So what actually is renewment? We didn't like the word retirement. So we made up a word and said, renewment, it's a cross between retirement and renewal. It is not a traditional support group, but it is supportive. We did not want to launch a membership organization. Both Bernice and I have had a lot of experience in that. We just wanted a movement, a forum, a conversation. And essentially, Renewment is a forum, a conversation group that is somewhat structured, that talks about transition and change, and initially from work to retirement. I have much more to say about it. If you want more, if you want to interject a question, I'm happy to do that, or I can continue.
Please continue. Yeah. Any high points or even low points over the last 20 years?
So high points is that it's grown virally. I mean, we did not market this. It's word of mouth, number one. Number two, we're not sure how many groups are actually meeting because we want people to take ownership. You own your own group. This morphed into a book. We inadvertently got some press from the LA Times and Time Magazine Online. The CEO of Scribner, which is a sub of Simon & Schuster, read the article, found the journalist, and they called us and they said, we'd like you to write a book. And we said, we can do that. 18 months later, we gave them a manuscript. And in the book, there are 38 essays that are based in part on our conversations. And the last part of the book is like a curriculum. It's turnkey operation, questions, resources, how to form a group, et cetera. So it emerged as a book, which to our shock and surprise, ended up on the LA Times bestseller list.
Amazing.
We had no intention for this to occur, but inadvertently, we have created enduring communities of women. People did not join us to make a new best friend, but these women bonded. They are celebrating together. They're now traveling together. They're supporting each other. They're driving one another to a chemotherapy appointment if needed. So we've created these communities of women. And I think this is so important in today's age because we need community. And even if you have a spouse or partner or have children, you can't always depend on them. That's kind of an executive summary of Renewment, and it continues to grow. There's another part of this, and I don't want to preempt your questions, Marcy.
No, please go on.
So now let's go to the pandemic. These women can't meet. So Bernice and I talk about this. She said, let's just try and send out an invitation from our database and say, we're going to have a renewment roundtable. We have 15 seats. If you want to join, just let us know. Well, we did that for the first roundtable, and then we had a waiting list. And then we had group two, and then a waiting list. Well, we're now in group seven with a waiting list. And as we talk more, if any of you are interested in joining us for a roundtable, we're happy to have you. In the roundtable, what I didn't talk about is the content. Let me go back to the original model of Renewment. The intention is for women to take their creative energies and goals and translate that into something else, into the next chapter that's as meaningful, if not more meaningful, than their work. Okay, so that's the original. But something very interesting has happened. Because these groups now are meeting for almost 20 years, different age groups are talking about different things. So maybe in your late 50s, 60s, it's about the transition from work to retirement. Who am I without my business card? What does productivity mean? What if he retires first? Okay. then moving women into, let's say, late 60s, 70s, more practical things, housing, financial security, caregiving. So now we move same women into their 70s, late 70s. Conversations are more existential. Am I leading the life I want to lead? What is my legacy? And then we have women in their 80s. That seems a period of time when women are talking about health. If we step back and say, now what have we actually done? Because this has been organic, grassroots, bottom up. We inadvertently have created a platform for career women to support them through transition and change for a lifetime. You don't graduate. Transition and change happens all the time, and particularly during the pandemic. There's lots more to tell you, but let me stop there. And if I can just defer a moment, Bernice, you want to add anything to that?
You covered it so well, Helen. I think that one of the outcomes that we never really expected was that deep friendships are started with the groups. And that has been a joy for women who have worked very hard, often taking care of their families and not having an opportunity to make that many friends because they're so taken up with what they have to do. And the other thing to be added is the fact that these are fabulous women. It is such a privilege and a pleasure to be able to work with them because they bring so much to the round table, as we talked about. One woman was looking for a home in Palm Desert, and another woman in the group who didn't know at all was a realtor and was able to help her find a place in the desert. So there are lots of wonderful offshoots that we didn't anticipate.
Great. Thanks, Bernice.
Definitely want to hear more anecdotes later. I do think we should, at this point, talk about the men, because we have been talking about these amazing women. Why would there be a difference in groups for men and women? And I guess you can talk about that based on, I know, your experience with male groups as well. Are men getting to be involved with Project Renewment? Are they doing their own thing? Tell us about the wonderful men.
I've worked with 20,000 employees in an educational, not a clinical setting, on the non-financial aspects of retirement. Men go about this differently. Women, it's sexist, I'm going to say it, in general, talk more and get to the issues a little quicker. We don't want to diminish opportunities for men, but it takes maybe a little bit more effort. We work with a group called the Life Transition Group. This is a group of about 25, 35 men, successful, who started, similar to us, two advertising executives on the bike trail in Redondo Beach, who love their work and say, oh my goodness, what are we going to do with our lives? And they formed this group called the Life Transition Group. They're highly organized, far more structured than Renewment. They meet once a month and have a program. So once a year, we sit around a conference table of 16 seats, 8 for us, the women, and 8 for the men. And we talk about a topic. We talk about relationships. We talk about goals in life. We talk about who have been our influencers. And what I always listen for, is there really a gender difference when we join both genders to talk about a common issue? The observation is generally not, except on one characteristic, and that is the ease with which women connect to other women who have similar concerns or interests. I remember one of the men said, how do you women do this? You know, how do you make this so easy? I don't know if he had a good answer. I think the communal aspect of women is a little different, but I think that's going to change with generations as younger men are taking more family nurturing responsibilities. We always feel privileged to be together, but they have grown organically. There are two other groups in the Southern California area, and there's some groups on the West Coast that are forming, but it's still relatively new. And if people are interested in the Life Transition Group, I'll connect you with them.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it will evolve. You know, there's been more acceptance of men being a little more vulnerable. in the media, at least, as the years go on, taking those roles as a full-time parent, et cetera. And I'm excited to see how this evolves.
I can add, groups are very powerful in terms of identifying issues. They're very powerful. And I think that's one thing we've seen both from the Life Transition Group as well as our Renewing Groups.
On the subject of groups, just for those on the call that may want to start their own or have informal groups, is there a magic number of people where it gets too big or a number where it's too small that you've learned?
On the face-to-face groups, we find 8 to 10 is a good number. And typically, these groups meet in someone's home as opposed to a restaurant. Usually share a meal, and I can say we've had great cooks, great meals together. So that would be the optimum. In our round table, it's a few more, but I would say 8 to 10 is an optimum number.
Can you feel any loss in the outcomes or connections because of the pandemic? Has it been difficult to get the same out of it via Zoom versus being at someone's home?
You always look for silver linings in a marginal catastrophe. And there has been a real benefit because we have women in our roundtables from across the country who in a million years would never be meeting with each other. We have a woman from Chile. We had someone from the UK. We had someone from Portugal, Tennessee, Florida, California. So the virtual nature has allowed more diverse women to spend time together. So that's been a plus. That's been a plus.
Yes, that's a really good point. And it's very good to focus on the silver linings. Well, let's take a little break from Project Renewment for the moment. Many people may not know that you are an amazing writer who has answered hundreds of questions for successful aging to over, as we said, 1.6 million people. What is the best advice you've ever given and maybe even received being an author with that kind of reach?
I try to be cautious and not to give advice. I'd say something to consider. This is something you might investigate. But I think there's probably a theme that goes through all my columns. And that is we need to take responsibility. We have to take responsibility for our own aging and how we age. Someone's not going to do that for us. So I think one is responsibility. The other is initiative. You know, we have to maybe start something. We may have to ask the first question. We need to be initiators. And I guess the other theme that goes through is hope. There has to be a modification, a possible solution, a resource. There were three themes, regardless of the topic, that I like to convey. And I believe it. And it's not believed. There's research to back it up. Just as an example, John Rowe and Robert Kahn years ago wrote a book, Successful Aging. And in that book, they made reference to studies in Sweden of fraternal twins. And the question is, how much does genetics and how much does lifestyle play into physical aging? Knowing physical aging is a declining process, that's a given. And they found that 70% of physical aging is due to lifestyle, was 50-50 for cognitive aging. So if you take that as your premise and you say, you know what? How I age physically, which means I lose functioning, that relates to 70% of my lifestyle. Again, I'm speaking in generalities, which says we have a lot of influence over how we age, which means we have the opportunity to take responsibility for it and do things which are good for us, whether it's exercise, good nutrition, managing stress, et cetera. And I think that's an underlying philosophy in all of my columns.
So interesting. I wonder, why is it so hard for us to take responsibility as we age?
I think aging is a hard sell, regardless of the data we have. It's like, don't talk to me about aging. I don't want to get old. I got a bad image of it. It's something we don't like to face. And I think we don't like to face it because we think we're victims of our aging. I like to put out, that's a choice. Now, there are people who have chronic conditions, acute conditions, and caregiving issues. There are hardships in aging, and we need to acknowledge that. But there's the other piece that says we have influence. It's like the fear of death, fear of aging. And let me toss in ageism. Ageism is alive and well in our society. whether it is in entertainment, whether it is in business, or whether it's in nonprofits. It's one of the last socially acceptable isms in our country. So people shy away from it. They shy away from it. Part of my responsibility in these columns is to say, don't shy away from it. Grab a hold of it and make it work for you, regardless of the question.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to talk about the pandemic, even though we've already talked about a silver lining. You're a professor in the field of aging. How has it changed our field? We've seen in the news the issues going around with independent living facilities and nursing homes. Are there any takeaways as professionals in the field of aging that we can latch on to?
If there has been any crack in our society, the pandemic has made it a ditch.
Yes.
And I think that comes with aging also. I think the pandemic has increased the awareness of aging. First of all, older adults are more susceptible and vulnerable to the virus. Second, the mortality rate for those 65 and above, 80% of the deaths are people from 65 and over. The incidence isn't as great, but the mortality rate. So there is an awareness. Then we talk about rationing care, overwhelmed medical facilities. And we ask, where are older adults going to be in line? You know, is the age of 85 going to work against you? So that's a big issue. The other thing I think the pandemic has drawn attention to is the issue of loneliness, isolation, conditions in long-term care facilities, the importance of relationships. All of that was important before the pandemic, but now it's just been elevated. It's become even more important. And you read it in the press. We talk about older adults and employment. Right now, the unemployment rate for older adults is higher than for people in midlife. Everything has been elevated. That has been perhaps an issue in aging. It's just become bigger with the pandemic. So hopefully that awareness will bring us closer to some solutions.
I sure hope so. I sure hope so. Sometimes things get worse before they get better. Is there anything you want to add?
Just a brief piece in all of our roundtables. We can't have discussions and ignore the environment. And I just actually gave a talk on this, and the title of the talk was Aging and Thriving During the Pandemic, Are you kidding? Are you for real? I mean, come on now. And I thought about that. My conclusion is we don't need to be satisfied just to survive. And to thrive is really an intention. That means, and there are a lot of definitions, you get better at something, you're just good at something, maybe like a communicator, you develop and grow, you are grateful, you feel good about yourself and your life. I think that we can hang on to one of those definitions and elevate it. If we have the intention not to just survive, our intention is to thrive, we're not going to go down a rabbit hole. We're not going to permit the pandemic to destroy our will. But I think it's an intentional type of thought, because it's easy to just say, I'll get by. We don't have to accept that. Again, I'm hopeful. There are many examples of how people are thriving. I'll throw one in. To thrive is to discover things. People are discovering exercise. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was the greatest inspiration on many levels, but one of them is exercise. And so to be inspired, to do something a little bit more, to feel successful.
I feel like your answer is also very much related to a previous answer about taking responsibility for our aging, for all of us. To thrive during the pandemic means also to take responsibility for having to find joy in other things, like you said, in fitness, in reading. We just wrote a column in my work about getting back into letter writing, the old-fashioned art of writing a physical letter, maybe to your grandchild, things like that. Well, okay, with that, there's a couple of questions, more logistical questions about where everyone can find your columns, the Daily Breeze, your page there. Helen, is there another way people can access your columns?
You can go to my website, which is helenmdennis.com. You can also go to a Facebook page called Successful Aging Community. I post all of my columns there. You can try the LA Daily News. You can try the Orange County Register. There are about a dozen newspapers that publish it.
Wonderful. There are a couple of people that have asked about joining Renewment. If they want to join or see if there are groups, you know, locally, how does somebody go about that?
So you can contact Bernice or me. I'm at Helen Denn, H-E-L-E-N-D-E-N-N, at gmail.com. We can let you know if there's a physical group in your area. And if not, we invite you to join a roundtable.
Wonderful. Okay. So about the book, is it a how-to for how groups get together or is it stories?
There are 38 essays. They're short, maybe 1,000 words. And each topic reflects a conversation we had. And the topics go from, who am I without my business card? What if he retires first? Why do I feel guilty reading in the afternoon? What does productivity mean at this stage of life? Then the last part of the book says, so you want to start a group, here's how you do it. It is list of topics, list of questions, resources, troubleshooting a group. We tried to make it a turnkey operation because we decided we didn't want to go out throughout the country seeding these groups, and we want the groups to own them. Stay in touch with us. We like to track our groups. But there are some principles in running a Renewment group. Typically, we have a time for we call check-in, just check in how everybody's doing. And then we select a topic, and that topic is discussed on personal level, professional level, historical level. And it's confidential.
Yeah, I'm sure that's very important, the confidentiality aspect.
We don't look at it as a self-help book. Women come to this from a position of strength. They've had careers, they've had influence over their life, but they'd like to have greater influence for the next 20 to 30 years and how to walk through that. So we don't fix people. If there's a really serious issue, we suggest getting some other type of communication or help. People come here from a position of strength to create the best future they can. And I should add, the giving back is a very important component. Marcy, you mentioned joy, but giving back, having a sense of purpose, reason to get up in the morning, feeling worthwhile, et cetera, all are parts of that joy, if you will.
Absolutely. Thank you. Highlighting what's changed over the last 19 years. Has everything gotten easier, or are there some things which have also become harder?
I think moving along the life course, some of the issues can become more complex. We start off this transition from work to retirement. Well, toss in now maybe some health issues, maybe some economic issues, maybe some relationship issues. There is the notion later life is not as dynamic as earlier life. Well, it's more dynamic. There's more stuff going on. So I think that has changed. And again, different issues arise at different life stages. But the good thing is that the Renewment platform can handle all of it.
Glad to hear that. Has technology becoming mainstream made life more difficult for people, more challenging?
Actually, the technology has made it easier, particularly in Southern California. If you live on the west side of Los Angeles and you have a meeting in Santa Monica and it's called for 5 o'clock, it's going to take you 2 hours to get there. And you likely will not go. Although, you know, the virtual cannot take the place of face-to-face, but it allows people actually to connect in the next best way. So I think technology has helped.
Our board president did mention that this is a great example of being able to reach people in different places. So Helen, we usually wouldn't get you on one of our forums because you might not be in the area. Helen, are you familiar with the research of Professor Becca Levy? Having a positive attitude about aging can result in us living 7.5 years longer.
I am, and it's very powerful. The notion of purpose and a positive attitude has physical implications. Those without it have an increase in high blood pressure, heart disease. You know, we know it's important, but somehow when we draw attention to the fact it's really unhealthy, it might kill you, it gets a little bit greater attention. Here's the hard part. How do you find it? Also, I think at least my generation was not socialized to the notion of purpose. When you went to school, no one said, well, Does it fulfill your heart space? I mean, do you really feel this is a purposeful endeavor? You know, are you going to be good at it? Can you get a job and go by? So having a purpose sounds so easy. But if you have gone along your life kind of on the trajectory, you went to school, you know, you got a job, you may or may not have gotten married, you have a career, maybe you have children. Has anyone ever asked you what your purpose is? No, you just kind of went along all the channels, all the stages that we socially expect. Passion is another word. Find your passion. Who talked about passion in our education, in our post-education? So these, I think, are contemporary concepts, if you will. They're old concepts, but contemporary in terms of relevancy. And it takes a little work to say, you know, this really is fulfilling for me. I feel truly passionate about X and I can do something. It takes some thought. That is a conversation for a Renewment group. That's precisely it.
What's so interesting to me personally about that is I'm in a generation that was told, go towards what you're passionate about and your job is your purpose. But I'm finding in my 30s with a lot of my friends who are starting to have children, we're all learning the opposite, that your job is your job and it does not define you. And we're all trying to wrestle with that, that actually what's outside of work is much more important and that your work doesn't define who you are, and to detach. So perhaps we're all just meeting in the middle.
Yeah, I think it's generational. That certainly wasn't the boomer and silent generation MO. I mean, you just worked very, very hard. And I think that's why the transition can be so difficult, because the identity was all work. And I think your generation may have it easier because they defined themselves away from work at a much earlier life stage.
Maybe. And actually on that topic, Lynn asked if you promote intergenerational activities.
Yes, very informally. We've had a couple of meetings, which were extraordinary, where we invited some younger women and some of our mature women. And it was a moment of discovering one another. The younger generation couldn't believe that at our life stage, we were vibrant and interesting and doing good things. And we were amazed how enlightened the younger generation was. It's something we'd like to do more of. It has great opportunity. And I think we're moving towards much more inter and multi-generational approaches to aging and to life. It's an area that can be further explored. I should add, Bernice and I do this as volunteers. So whatever else we do in our life, we take care of Renewment. And so I think it's really a question of time allocation. And it's something that's waiting to be developed even more.
Thank you for doing this completely volunteer. So do we, right, Susie? With At Home and Growing Older, finding purpose in these other things outside of work. Rachel said, some people believe they're not aging successfully because they can't do the same things they did when they were young. I love that you are talking about taking responsibility and initiative for your own process. That is, within the confines of your own capability, what is possible. And then she asks, can you say more about the human platform? Quote, the human platform can handle it. Did I hear that correctly? Are you saying we were designed to weather this kind of transition, that it's natural?
I say we all have the potential. I'm not sure how we were designed, but I think we all have the potential. But we have to think about it. It's not automatic. It's a conscious survive to thrive mentality. You know, there's also a debate about the term successful aging, probably 100 articles that address that, because it suggests if you, say, have physical limitations, is that successful aging? My position is if you are the best you can be, that's successful aging to me. If you're in a wheelchair, that's the best you can be. Doesn't mean you're without health issues. It doesn't mean that you're without limitations. But there's been a lot of arguments saying success suggests people either are or are not. And I don't like to define it that way. If you're the best you can be, that's good enough for me.
Well, Andrea and Mikoko are wondering if you've been approached by women maybe who wanted to start a group or join one who didn't have a full-time career and might have stayed at home as their career.
We have not. However, because it's about transition and change, there are women who are fully engaged in volunteer life who certainly would fit into the model. That's not to say you couldn't develop a roundtable for women who did not have careers. Just take the pandemic. It's certainly a big transition and change. We haven't done that because we did focus on career women, but that's not to say you couldn't put a roundtable together for women in that position. And it doesn't mean that the career women are more valuable than women who have not been in the workplace. I would like to say it's different, but not to put a value on it.
We shall not. We shall not put a value on that. I thought of a question while we were talking about the groups meeting. Is there a specific topic that you've seen over the 20 years that has just always been a hot topic among the groups, like financial transition or grandparenting challenges, relocating? You know, is there a theme that you've seen?
So I want to answer that, and then I want to defer to Bernice. The one that I would identify is identity. The who am I without my business card? And that would go to any profession. I also do some work with soon to retire rabbis and cantors, which is an interesting niche. That's a huge identity issue. Physicians, how do you become a non-physician, particularly a generation where you are your work? So I would say identity is a really big one, but I want to defer to Bernice.
Well, I think identity is absolutely the one, but also purpose and meaning in life seems to be something that is across the board for everyone. Purpose and meaning.
And again, these are not typical conversations. What these forums do is provide the environment where you can have these conversations. We've done a few surveys about the impact. The Renewman experience has made a difference in people's lives. We meet fabulous women, but aside that, that's the reason we keep going at this. Makes a difference.
And how often do the groups meet?
Typically, it's once a month, but now our group, which is now into 20 years, is meeting every other month. But most of them, it's once a month. There is a group that recently formed, and particularly during the pandemic, they're meeting every week. And I should add, every group is different. We have one group that has a lot of highly organized, high-level leaders, if you will, and they run their group like a corporate retreat. They have stickies, they have a flip chart and homework, and it's working beautifully. There are others that say, you know, we had a topic that we decided, but you know, this week, we don't think we want that topic. So we're going to change topics. Is that okay with everybody? Each group reflects the personality of the women who are part of it. And again, there is a structure, but how you interpret it is up to you.
I like that. I like that there's a whole spectrum and that each group sort of falls into what works for them. Another question, do groups support second careers?
Yes, very much so. It does support second careers and also giving back engagement. We do have a woman who had a horticulture business and she took some acting classes. We have a woman who was an executive director who became a pretty well-established professional photographer. The definition of success is not defined by a value of what you do next. The definition of success is if what you move to is meaningful and right for you and you found it. Now, it could be a photographer, it could be an actress, you know, it could be a docent at the museum in our roundtables. We find people incredibly active in getting out the vote and texting and letter writing and calling at a very high level with great intensity and passion and purpose.
Can you just repeat that, the definition of success?
Rather than putting a value on it, success is if you find what's important to you and you're doing it and it's fulfilling and it's meaningful, that's successful. It could be taking care of yourself. It could be fitness. But if that's it, we say, glad you found it. Godspeed. And for another person, it could be back to work part-time. Or another person may be taking care of aging parents. That's really an important piece and meaningful. So success is very subjectively defined. It's the extent that it's meaningful, fulfilling to the individual.
Wonderful. Hopefully somebody wrote that down. I don't know if this question will work generationally, but has there been any ask for those people who don't identify as a certain gender to want to join a group? Just curious.
That hasn't happened yet, but I think it's a good question. One of the things we would like is to have greater diversity. We have some representation from other backgrounds, but not sufficient. We have a list of things to do to fully expand Renewment. That's one of them.
Thank you for sharing that and for being honest. I would guess that a lot of us in our professional and personal groups are also struggling with the same thing. It's important to keep bringing that up so that we can feel safe sharing, and it will allow us all to make changes in how we recruit and how we mirror ourselves. We at Home with Growing Older also want to welcome and be more inclusive with others who represent different demographics. So we all have that in common. Helen and Bernice, thank you so much for joining. This has been very enlightening for me, I hope for everyone else as well. And if you feel so inclined and want to donate to At Home with Growing Older so we can continue these sorts of programs, please do.
But just wanted to also thank Helen for some wonderful takeaways. One of them, which stays with me, is that we don't need to be satisfied just to survive. To thrive is an intention. And I think that's a really good one. Thank you so much.
And thank you for the gracious invitation. Wonderful to be with you.
You are listening to At Home on Air. We are now switching to an exclusive interview update with Helen Dennis and Suzanne Stadler from July of 2024.
Back in 2020, we didn't have a podcast. So now we have a really timely update of this conversation, which was nearly 4 years ago.
I continue to write my column. It's now over 1,200 columns in over 20 years. So that continues. I still do some retirement education and still involved with nonprofits. But Renewment continues to be an interesting story. We now have over 100 women across the country participating, and it has grown virally. We've had two meetups. We have a partnership with University of Southern California, and we held it there. It's been 25 years for Renewment, which is unbelievable. So we've launched a research project. We distributed a survey to our virtual women and to women who we still know are in groups. And we've held one of two focus group sessions. Our purpose is to really share what have we learned from each other from this experience, what has been the impact of Renewment, and sharing with our peers and like-minded women, but of equal or perhaps even greater importance, is what can we share with the upcoming career women who are moving into their next life stage. It's a different time, a different environment. They don't have to totally reinvent the wheel. So it has a lot of potential. Bernice and I have no intention of writing another book, but the dissemination plan is being developed. I'm not sure. It could be a report. It could be a series of articles. But first, we have to get the data back. So that's kind of the next chapter to really say now take stock. Because we've always felt that Renewment is for us, but it is for others. What can we do to contribute to a body of knowledge that is used? The book was the first one in giving back. So this will be the second piece.
It's beautiful, Helen, and congratulations. Thank you for doing this for the next wave of people who are starting to think about how they want to live this phase of life. Looking around, I feel like the age people start thinking about this has shifted, partially because they have seen their parents growing older and have learned from this experience. So I think that this next generation, you know, women in their 40s, 50s, who are partially caring for their older parents are already much more aware and thinking about how they want to live this phase of life, which also has an impact on how they currently live. I'm just curious if you agree with this and if you see this also in your work.
I think there's a greater awareness of financial security and insecurity. We know the number of people in their 40s and 50s that have no retirement savings. They're looking at that, and then they're looking at the cost, both financially and from a human resource perspective, of caring for older parents, siblings, partner. And they're concerned. I think they're worried. You know, cost of living goes up, children come back to live with you, unexpected expenses, healthcare, rents, mortgages. So I think there's a greater level of concern and insecurity. And hopefully that's a motivator. But sometimes it's hard to catch up. You know, the longer you wait, the harder it is. I would agree with you. I think there's an increased awareness. And also aging it's in the news. We cannot get away from aging. Sometimes in good ways and sometimes in not so good ways. Aging is a hot topic. Not only will I have enough money, but your timing. Aging has really taken the front page.
Isn't this amazing how this has changed in the last 10 years?
The boomers have aged. We know what's happened. Every wave of the boomers is big news. You know, from when they were born to the diaper industry to preschool, the high schools, we're watching a trajectory. I had a conversation with a friend who was looking for a GI person. They said, you can't get an appointment for 3 months. Maybe everyone's having GI problems. And then he said, maybe it's demographics. I said, you're right. We have a lot more older people. They are having more GI problems. We have the same number of doctors. We don't have enough to serve them. So we're feeling the impact. And I think that plays out with older parents. I mean, now the boomers have older parents. They're in their 80s and 90s. So if we follow the age trail of the boomers, a lot will make sense.
Yeah, that's really true and has such a big impact. I'm also curious how this has impacted the notion of renewment, you know, the opportunity to practice renewment.
I don't think I've spoken to a woman for whom work has been very important that has not identified with the question of how do I make this change. Now, something interesting, the groups that have met face-to-face, initially when they met, they were moving towards retirement. Our virtual groups, 85% of the women are retired or moving to retirement or working part-time. So it's a different cohort. Now, this is a group of women who they're there. They are in the retirement experience. How does that work? Our purpose is to support women, but the other piece is to inspire them. So the inspire piece is really important. But that's a different cohort. So who is studying retired career women? You know, we haven't done the thorough literature research, but it seems obvious. But the other thing, this is really the first time we've had a large number. So it's understandable, but here we are. I mean, I'm of the silent generation. I'm just before, which is not silent anymore. That big boom, you're older. I think that's part of it.
Yeah. I'm curious if the results of your study will inspire maybe more research.
Research on the practical side or applied side of research, information that's going to be useful in people's lives. So part of this project will do that.
How is renewment working for you? Has something changed, you know, how you see this in your own life? I would be really interested to hear.
I think it has an impact. I am more intentional and more aware of where I place myself in my commitments. Because I could work 80 hours, and God willing, I will be 84 next month. I am grateful. But I'm saying, wait a minute. Hopefully I have a long, healthy life expectancy, but I want to have a little bit more flexible time. And I did something I've never done. I took a month sabbatical from my college for 22 years. And it's self-imposed. I've had a weekly deadline, 52 weeks a year. No one says I can't take time off. And guess what? All the newspapers did just fine. And my editor republished. He had over 1,000 columns he could look at. So I'm a little bit more aware of where I'm placing myself and looking for more discretionary time. Because Renewman has a lot of potential. It could take a full-time staff and team, but Bernice and I aren't quite ready to go intercontinental on this.
Yes. You know, I looked at some of your columns in preparation of our conversation today. It's amazing how many topics you address and how personal they are, but there's always a general takeaway, which is really relevant for everybody.
In every column, there's a piece of research, a piece of experience, what Mayo Clinic says, what the National Institute on Aging says, you know, reliable sources. So that, to me, hopefully differentiates it from a Dear Abby column.
Yes, absolutely. I noticed your resources, you know, the National Poll on Aging, et cetera. Yeah.
Your research center. So I guess part of my goal is to bring some of the research to the people. It's great in a report and it's great in a grant. And I really feel that the column is a vehicle for that.
It's a great vehicle for it.
Yeah. And I want to say, I have a wonderful editor. If I don't have a topic, I can say, you know, this week, I think it's important to address XYZ. I went to a conference and some really interesting topics to share. And he's very generous and very kind and very supportive.
He's probably very grateful to have you. I started writing a monthly blog on Substack, which is this platform for writers, et cetera. It's called Something to Write Home About. It's more of an opinion piece. And it touches again on this topic, different perspectives and components of how to manage your aging experience. I know how challenging sometimes it is. I can't believe you do it weekly. That's just incredible. So thank you for doing this.
I would love to read what you're writing. Can you send me something?
Yes, I'll send you a link to it. Thank you for your interest. It's very kind. One of the things which is part of this whole topic to manage your own aging experience is that in the previous conversation, you said we have a lot of influence over how we age, which means we have the opportunity to take responsibility for it and do things which are good for us, whether it's exercise, good nutrition, managing stress, etc. And I think it's an underlying philosophy in all of my columns. My question related to this is, despite the fact we know what's good for us, including how small adaptations to the home, like putting a safety bar in your shower, the majority of people just don't do it. And, you know, I am included in some of this too. I wonder why. I wonder why we don't do it. We know it's good for us. We know it actually doesn't take that much, and we don't do it.
To know is different from to do. And I think basically, we don't like to talk about aging, although aging is a big topic. We don't like to talk about our own aging and vulnerabilities. It may think of deaths, it may think of dependency, but I think it's an avoidance. I'll give you an example. I live alone, I'm a widow. Did not want to wear one of those things around my neck.
The emergency buttons, yeah.
Now, I've been living alone for 20 years. Apple came out with a watch that is a fall detection. I said, brilliant, it's cool, absolutely. I've had it maybe 4 years. So why didn't I do it 8 years ago? I still was living alone. I think one is denial. Those emergency response systems work very well, but it was something that identified me with this thing on my chest that was unattractive, that wasn't cool, that didn't make me feel good.
It doesn't categorize you.
Exactly. Let's go to ageism. If we feel we're being perceived as, quote, old, whatever old means, but old meaning declining, old meaning no energy, old meaning we don't function because of the stereotypes of being, quote, old, I think we deny it. And I think it's because what society reflects. I mean, in Japan, it's not a problem. Old is expected. Hope you get there. If we go a little deeper on the denial, it's how society sends us a message that says, I'm old and useless. I'm old and ugly. I'm old and over the hill. We may know that intellectually it's not true, but society is very powerful. I mean, I live in Southern California in the Hollywood scene. It gets important here than it is in Nebraska.
Yes, it's definitely a big part of it.
When I think a little more deeply about denial, it's because how society will respond to me. I don't feel I'm how they perceive me. So it's denial. Go a step deeper. It's the societal perception and response to being old.
I totally agree. And I also think it's the self-value we attach to ourselves in this phase of life, which often declines for that reason. We are doing this Aging 360 workshop, creative peer-to-peer learning workshops about how people can make adaptations to their home. And it very much links to your philosophy of renewment, creativity, you know, taking action, etc. I always say aging is like an extreme sport. It takes the same practice, the same resilience, the same determination and imagination, you know, similar to an athlete who needs to do a really demanding task. But as older adults, we get medicalized fixes and solutions, something which only points towards weakness and not strength. So I always encourage people in my workshop to actually think creatively and really put themselves in the center of this endeavor to adapting their homes.
You certainly are in a position to do that. I mean, how perfect, how absolutely perfect for your profession. By the way, I have a colleague who was an Olympic volleyball player who wrote a book called Aging as a Sport.
Are you serious?
And she wrote the book. It's exactly what you said, the training, the competition, you know, setting your goals and the frustration. I mean, it's really a great little book.
I'm going to Google it and see if I can find it. I'm super excited. Thank you for mentioning this. Is there anything else you would like to bring up, which might be an addition to the interview you did many years ago and to our conversation today?
So I guess when we started, it was just the beginning of the pandemic.
That's exactly it.
And so now this is out of the pandemic. So I guess since then, because of the administrative part of our virtual roundtables, we had to hire someone. So that's a new piece. But we raised enough money to have a part-time assistant for a year. So that's a little different. Part of growth.
That's right. Part of growth. And it takes some energy and capacity to do that. But then you want to open the doors to as many people as possible, of course.
Exactly. I would say the conversations are a little different. The women are talking not about my transition from work to retirement, but more life issues, resilience, the role of friendships. In fact, we just launched a subgroup of solo agers. These are women with no family and no children. And that is growing. That is growing.
How can people find this solo ager group?
They can email me at helenden@gmail.com. So yes, and the solo aging group is both virtual and in person. At the moment, most are Southern California, but there are some from East Coast also. We have career women in later life, most retired, who are looking at, you know, their future. And the two big issues are friendship and their healthcare. So I think that's really the update.
It's a very well-defined group. Thank you so much, Helen.
Thank you.
This episode of At Home On Air was produced by the At Home with Growing Older team. We could not host these conversations without the generosity of our marvelous and passionate guests and hosts. Thank you for sharing your personal and professional insights. To subscribe to this podcast and for more information, visit us at homewithgrowingolder.org. Thank you to our sponsors, the Walnut Foundation, a San Francisco family foundation. At Home with Growing Older strives to educate, inspire, and connect people across generations and disciplines to re-envision and improve the experiences of later life. Don't forget to subscribe and tune in for the next episode.